another episode of Gaming in the Six. I'm your host, Christine Chubb. With me in studio today is the wonderful Steve Leung. How are you, Steve?
I'm good. How are you?
Let's just go right into the show right off the bat. No dilly-dally.
Oh, wow. Just no proper segue or anything.
Nothing. This was a huge week for esports in Toronto, with the Defiant having not only their first big game, but a big win. Steve, maybe people don't know who are listening about the history of the Defiant and why they're such a big deal. Take us through the whole event.
So the Toronto Defiant, for those who don't know, it is Toronto's first, well, it's Toronto's Overwatch League team. For people who don't know what the Overwatch League is, it is obviously a league about Overwatch.
There you go.
but it's, more specifically, it is Blizzard's official league. And its big thing is it's city-based. So that's why there is the Toronto Defiant. They're an expansion team, one of eight. Another expansion team are the Vancouver Titans. And they have a much cooler mascot, in my opinion, as well. They have like a Sasquatch Yeti thing.
That's a very Vancouver thing.
But what's also interesting about this league is that that there's obviously Los Angeles and New York and Boston, but there's also London, England, and now Paris, the Paris Eternal. There's also teams in China, teams in South Korea. So that's why for the first season, which was last season, and this season, all the teams are playing in Los Angeles or Burbank, which is like a suburb of LA, basically, at Blizzard's Blizzard Arena. What will be interesting is next year, there will be proper home games.
Nice.
So Toronto will actually play here in Toronto. But back to the Defiant, they were founded like in early September, officially announced as expansion teams, like expanding into the league. Like the league went from 12 teams to 20 this year. Funny story, actually. I got off the plane from my vacation in Japan on October 24th, and I immediately ran to an event where the Defiant were being announced. So before they were just called Toronto OWL, mm-hmm. and then they were called Toronto Defiant, like their official name. It's supposed to symbolize the rebellious spirit and resiliency and tenacity that Toronto has. I myself don't necessarily see it. I've always viewed Toronto as a white collar city.
You're not wrong. Defiant is not usually the word that I would associate with Toronto. I would think more like casual acceptance and mild apathy. But I don't think that goes well on a t-shirt.
But, it works well because I guess the Toronto sports fans' main thing is we may be a white-collar city, but we like blue-collar athletes.
Fair enough. I mean, the Raptors, that's an aggressive name.
Yeah. It's also a name based off of, I was capitalizing on an incredibly popular film at the time.
Fair enough. Fair enough. It was. That's very, very true.
So they created this this name in October. They had a fan meet and greet on just a couple weeks back, where actually 300 people were lined up around the block for the EB Games at Yonge and Dundas Square, where apparently 300 people came out. And then the event that I was at on Friday, or last Friday, I guess I should say, at Real Sports Bar and Grill. It was an event that, I don't believe they were selling tickets, but you had, reserve tickets to kind of get in. Mm-hmm. The place was completely full. Mm-hmm. 500-plus people, and I was blown away because I did not think there was this level of, groundswell interest.
Yeah.
In a game, first of all, Overwatch, its numbers are declining every month. It's not the most popular game, right? It's not Fortnite, mm-hmm. and it's not Apex Legends or any of the top popular shooters. Mm-hmm. I learned more than I thought I would on that Friday evening, because I was honestly expecting there'll be 150 people tops.
Yeah.
Right? It'll be kind of pushed into a corner of Real Sports. But no, it's that gigantic 40-foot HD screen was showing the game. Every TV basically in the house was showing the game. there's a lot of money that's behind this team and this league. Like, there's a lot of corporate sponsorship. And I think that is because, again, like, the whole city-based gimmick's the wrong word, but like the city-based organization of the Overwatch League. Whereas like other esports are just like, I'll use like League of Legends for example, right? There's like TSM and Cloud9, Echo Fox, Team Liquid, right? These are like random names, right? They have nothing to do with the city and like connecting regionally. So I think the reason why there's so much sponsorship, there's so much interest from like the corporate world in the Overwatch League, even as general gamers moving away from Overwatch, is because it's a lot easier to sell sponsorship to something that looks familiar. Like, mm-hmm. Overwatch League looks like regular sports, right? It looks like the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, like, there's the Leafs and the Raptors. Now there's the Defiant. So, in that sense, I think it's working from a business standpoint. And, like, the question I was trying to get answered when I walked into that event on Friday was, you obviously have your corporate investors on board, but that doesn't mean anything unless you have, like, actual fans, mm-hmm. like, people who are going to actually buy and consume your product. They have at least 500 of them. They're going to need a lot more than that, but it's a hell of a start, in my opinion. It's, like, way, way bigger than I possibly thought it was going to be.
Before we delve really deep into the esports event and talk about the man behind that that great evening, let's talk about the actual game itself. Toronto comes in. How were they seen as going into this match? Were they thinking it was kind of Toronto was going to be the underdog, or was everybody kind of cautiously optimistic?
So I read a lot of preview material, and then I spoke to like the head coach of the Defiant, mm-hmm. Bishop, and basically they were like a team full of like mostly largely unknowns. Like a good comparison is like comparing them to like Vancouver's new expansion roster. Vancouver's expansion roster, for people who know Overwatch, they'll know who these players are because they're part of a famous team that was called Runaway. They have a really famous, inspiring story where like a Korean couple who happened to be streamers kind of took them in and like funded them from their pocket and had them like kind of rise up to the minor leagues of Overwatch. And then eventually that roster was bought by Luminosity Gaming, which is helping to run like the Vancouver Titans. Mm-hmm. So the Titans have like a pretty well-known roster. Defiant does not. Like they have a bunch of players who some of them played kind of part-time in Overwatch League last year. Most of them also come from the minor leagues, but they weren't, because they didn't have like that kind of story, that narrative backing them, and they weren't part of this like one big team that they just kind of just brought over from the minor leagues and kind of promoted them all at the same time to the major leagues. They were very much unknown. And like actually probably maybe their best known player, Nico, he started the season suspended for three games. So he was suspended for the Friday's game, and he'll be suspended now for this weekend's games because they played two games this weekend.
What did he get suspended for?
He was suspended for like infractions to do with his Battle.net account. I can't quite remember the exact language.
Yeah.
But it's like, I think it's like account boosting or something along those lines. Or like, I think there's also a line in there like conduct detrimental to the league, to like league operation, or like, I don't know what it was, but he got slapped with a 3-game suspension.
Well, not the best way to start a season, but I mean, they won. So that's gotta still be hype for the rest of his team members.
The victory was interesting because for those who don't know, like the way the format for Overwatch League works is you play at least four maps. So it's obviously like a first to three, but even if you go like 3-0, you still have to play that fourth map. But in Defiant's case, they got down 0-2. They dropped their first maps and they were looking really rough to start the third one. So mm-hmm. it looks like they were going to lose. But then they made a dramatic comeback, won that third map, built some momentum, take the fourth map, put it into like the tiebreaker, basically the tiebreaker map, and then they won that, and the place erupted.
Yeah.
Like it was quite a sight. You would think it was like a playoff game, like a Raptors playoff game, because like the reason I say Raptors is because their colors, the team colors, are like a red, white, and black. Mm-hmm. And in real sports, they had rally towels, and so everyone had like these red rally towels. They're like waving them around,
wow,
and like going nuts and cheering and going insane. And so it felt like it was like I was watching a playoff game at real sports, even though this was just like regular season game.
Yeah,
yeah.
For anybody listening who has never been to Real Sports, it is perhaps the biggest sports bar in the city. It's right in the heart of downtown Toronto, right near where the Raptors and the Leafs play. The Jays are just down the street. Like Steve said, it has this massive television, so huge sporting events are broadcast there. I went there a couple of times to watch those pay-per-view UFC fights there, and the place
yes.
just is crammed. It's got two levels. It has really good chicken wings.
Yes.
The
food there is excellent. I'm not the biggest Real Sports fan is because like the claim is a sports bar, it's way too posh to be a sports bar to me.
It is, but like just size wise like it's not fooling around. So to walk in and have like the entire place packed with esports fans, you know, what were you thinking as a fan of esports? Like, what was your first reaction to all of this?
So my first reaction was like, I can't believe there were this many people for this event. Now, I preface that knowing that, and we'll get into them in just a second from now, I'm sure, but like knowing that there was going to be at least 25 to 30 people who were going to be there, who were going to be super fans, right? Because there's a supporters club there. And like I said, we'll get into that a little later. But 470 other people out of, right? Were not like people who I knew were like mega super fans, and they were just there supporting esports. It was kind of surreal to me because like perhaps I shouldn't think this way, but like video game fandom and like video game culture, like I know how big it is, right? Like we've been covering video games for a very long time. We've seen the sales, we know it's all there. But I guess it's different when you actually see people turn out for this, because like video games and like esports to me were just something that you do at home. Part of the appeal of this is that you don't have to show up in person to get kind of an optimal experience, I guess, as opposed to like, if you have like floor seats to the Raptors game, that's about as good as you're going to possibly get viewing experience, entertainment experience. But for esports, you can have just as good an experience, like just pure viewing wise, on your couch, looking on your phone, as you are at a bar. But all these people turned out as a show support, maybe, to just be a part of the moment.
Yeah, it is a defining moment. And, you know, Steve, you've gone to several esports events in the past. Some of them have been absolutely massive. How would you rate the energy that was in that bar that night?
It was up and down. Those first two maps, particularly like at the end of the second one, things got real quiet. I found that really interesting because people were like so nervous. Like I said, it felt like a playoff game in the sense that people were just like, their eyes were just glued to the screen. Like there was a VIP area, right, where it was mostly like corporate investors and like select VIP guests, and they were there chatting, right, like business, whatever.
But, I bet that's verbatim how it went.
The people who kind of reserved their spot to be there and weren't just like invited guests, those people were like glued. Their eyes were just glued to the screen. And like I said, it just felt like a playoff game where like this matters so much to fans. Like everything that's going on that screen, it's like these chicken wings. I saw a guy just like sure his screen, took a small bite of the chicken wing, took a small swig of beer. Just cannot take your focus off of what's happening on screen.
Now, you did mention the super fans who were there, and you have a piece that's on in Sportsnet right now, if you go to sportsnet.ca, about the event, and you talk to, I guess, the brains behind the super fandom, Richard Ng. Tell me about him and, like, why he wanted to create this fandom for the Defiant.
His story is interesting. He's originally a Toronto native. He moved to New York in 2012, and he's a big gamer. He started playing Overwatch probably a year after its release, and around that same time, the Overwatch League was going to be launching, and he saw that, well, I'm living in New York. There's going to be a New York team. I like this game. Is there anything, are there like events going on or around the launch? He saw there wasn't really much, so he decided to create his own. Mm-hmm. Went to this little bar he calls Waypoint Cafe, and like about 12 people showed up. And that was the start of the Five Deadly Venoms, which was turned into a supporters club. Now, for those who don't know what a supporters club is, it's kind of organized fandom that's borrowed from European soccer, primarily. There's usually like small fees involved with membership, just to help cover membership costs. And you get like perks out of it, like T-shirts or scarves, merchandise, essentially. Like Richard was a big like soccer fan growing up. Like he was like a TFC season ticket holder, I believe, before he moved to New York. So he just decided, well, I liked this model, the supporters club model, because TFC has a number of supporters clubs, the most famous being Red Patch Boys. Mm-hmm. So he decided to create a supporters club for his Overwatch League team, and called the Five Deadly Venoms, which is an allusion. Just alluding to the five boroughs of New York, and also to the famous martial arts film, The Five Deadly Venoms, because he's a big martial arts head. Mm-hmm. This kind of model, like, seemed to resonate with a few of the other teams. So there's a team in China, like I mentioned, called Shanghai Dragons. They started a supporters club in that same New York bar that the New York team supporters club spawned from. Students from the university, like I think the University of Houston, started one for the Houston Outlaws. There's one for the San Francisco Shock. There's one for the Boston Uprising, so on and so forth. And then he moved back to Toronto last November. So that's when I interviewed him initially. And so then I asked him, it's like, all right, so this leads me to the obvious question. Are you going to create what you made in New York here in Toronto? And he said he wasn't sure at the time. Well, a few months later, he was revving up like that old community organizer kind of, those bones in him, mm-hmm. I guess, were stirred. And he has now created Toronto Alpha Flight, aka, as he likes to say, Toronto AF.
That's delightful. I like that very much. So did you talk to him about, like, what his reaction, you know, when you start with a club in New York and there's 12 people and then you have this first big night here and there's 500, like, was he expecting this?
So I actually asked him that exact question, pretty much.
Like great minds.
Like, not the same phrasing, but, like, pretty much the exact same question. And he said that he had a hunch.
Yeah.
Because he had seen the support for the meet and greet. And then before this event for his supporters club Toronto Alpha Flight, they had an event that he called Noodle Watch, where it was just going out for noodles and then going to like a LAN cafe to then play Overwatch. And he told me 30 people showed up for that, which is like double the amount of people that first showed up for the New York event. Mm-hmm. So he told me that he had a feeling there's going to be something there.
Yeah. You know, you don't want to compare any kind of fandom in its infancy to what it could be. You know, you don't want to think, well, it's really big now. It's always going to be this way. Do you think that has the potential, like the fan base has the potential to keep growing and keep going? Or do you think it's like everybody's really excited and curious now, but you think that's going to fall off?
That's a question that I had on my mind, that I've had on my mind since this thing was first announced and I first started covering it. Because yes, you can cite like growth projections and how much money is coming in through investors and whatnot. And then yes, like the very first night, people want to be part of the first of things, right?
That's, of course.
Right. It's exciting. It's new. It's at a swank ass like sports bar. It looks cool to go, mm-hmm. right? Like if you're a gamer and you have any interest in Overwatch, this is something that's cool to go to. Right? The hard work, I think, starts now.
Yeah.
We're mid-February, heading into March. The weather keeps getting grosser and grosser. There aren't going to be really official events to kind of go to. So where is this fan base going to go? How does it grow? Who is it?
Yeah.
Right? I asked all of this stuff to, like, the president of like, and CEO, like, the ownership group, who owns the Toronto Defiant, Overactive Media, by the way, and they're trying to build themselves as the MLSC of esports, because they already bought Splice, and so they actually have a League of Legends team right now. They play in the LEC, which is the European Championship for League of Legends. They have a Rocket League team, they have a Call of Duty team, they have a Halo team.
Wow.
So this Toronto-based esports organization has like is very much already become one of the biggest esports organizations in the world, and they've only existed for like 5 months. Right?
No pressure.
But the president and CEO is Chris Overholt, who was formerly the head and CEO of the COC, the Canadian Olympic Committee.
Okay.
So when I asked him, like how do you grow the brand from here? Because, like, obviously the launch event is successful. He basically told me they're going to be more active on social media. It's like, okay, like, it's whatever. But the big thing is that, like, they're looking to build a stadium.
I was going to ask, if they do end up bringing it to Toronto, where do you think they're going to be playing? And
they have to bring it to Toronto. I feel like that's part of, like, the league mandate, that they're going to have home and away games for next season. But I have no idea where this venue is. The only thing I can say and I can report, and I've already reported in the past, is they expect the stadium to be announced sometime this summer. And if that does happen, they may be doing some test events, trial runs for like this like stadium, arena, whatever you want to call it, at some point. Like they'll be like doing some test events. So that means that like the Toronto Defiant players, who like 300 people lined up to see in the cold, right, just to get a chance to meet and get stuff signed, could be in Toronto as early as I guess the fall.
Okay.
I'm just kind of forecasting that.
Yeah.
In which case, I guess them actually being in market will be a hell of a lot better. Like, a lot more concrete to see just what this product actually is.
Yeah.
Because right now it seems removed, like it seems far away, right? So like, for example, at the launch event, yes, we're like watching the game live, but it's over in like California, right? Whereas like for the Raptors playoffs or just any Raptors or Leafs game, you could be at Real Sports and think to yourself, all right, they're just playing across the street right there. Like, mm-hmm. They're literally, like, these people are real, and they're literally playing just, like 30-second walk from where I am right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but when it comes to, you know, when it comes to growing the brand, do you think they'll look more towards guys like Richard and, like, future maybe same scale or similar style events that he may be a part of or he may plan? Or do you think it would be more corporate-y kind of schmoozy events?
So this launch event, this wasn't organized by Richard.
Oh, okay. But he's a part of the team thing, right?
But like so this launch event was organized by the team.
Okay.
And Richard and his Toronto Alpha Flight, that they just got tickets and to go and show support. And I believe like Richard has spoken to or been in contact with the team, because they're not an official supporters club right now, but like this is something with supporters clubs. There are some clubs, like particularly in soccer, who are official supporters clubs and have like official sanctioning.
Okay.
From the team. For now, the Toronto Alpha Flight is just like a community-based sort of like, I guess, organization. But to answer your question, like, I think, I know that, like, Richard's going to continually, like, host events himself, like kind of grassroots events with Toronto Alpha Flight. Like, every game that they play, I believe they're going to be at Hive, which is at Yonge and St. Clair. It used to be called Raiders.
It's like an
esports bar, right? But I think it's called The Hive now.
I didn't know that.
So every Toronto Defiant game, they will be there. So like, if you're listening to this and you're interested in like seeing what this is all about, what Toronto Alpha Flight is, who Richard is, I recommend on those game days to head down in time for the game mm-hmm. and check it out.
Now, I just want to ask you more of a generic esportsy type question, since you've been covering esports for a long time now, not only for Sportsnet, but on our previous show, Got Game. When it comes to the dreaded comment section of some of the articles that you've done, have you noticed that maybe has the tide changed a little bit from, you know, the comments of esports isn't sports to has it evolved to any kind of like, I'm curious or I'm on board now that Toronto has a team? Or is it still there's that fine line that the masses are drawing here where they're just like, sports is sports and video games are video games and nary the two shall cross?
It's more that.
Yeah.
and I think it'll always be that because there is such a huge generational divide there. Like, I was speaking to a coworker today, and he said, Steve, I was like watching what you're tweeting and whatnot on Friday, but I just don't get it. Like, I don't understand why people would watch other people play video games. And it's like, there's that divide, I think. It won't always exist because it's becoming so much more normalized, but, like, I mean, there are people who, like, stopped playing video games, like, after, I guess, age 10, after elementary school or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right? Stopped playing video games after elementary school and never played a video game since, and thinks that's just the way what life is, because, like, video games are supposed to be, we're supposed to be for kids, right? And they can't conceptualize that this could be entertainment for adults.
Do you think, though, if the Defiant becomes successful and that kind of, you know, quote-unquote esports subculture ends up becoming more of a well-seen, you know, you could get, like, posters on buses and stuff like that to start promoting it, do you think that's the key to switching over the mindset?
I don't think it'll change things at all.
Oh,
because
really?
Because like you mentioned, like mainstream posters and whatnot, we have seen entire subway stations taken over with advertisement for mega game releases, right?
Yeah.
And it's like that is not going, like, just because you see, I don't know, like, I think one of the most recent ones I saw was for Destiny, like Destiny 2, right? Like a while ago. There was all this Destiny 2 branding and marketing, and it's like took over, I think, Young and Dundas Station. But that's not going to change, like, the vast majority of people's minds. Like, they see Destiny 2 and they just treat it like any other ad. It's like, well, that doesn't register with me. It's not for me. It's video game stuff. It's not for me.
Yeah.
Right?
Fair enough. I mean, do you think that there's, when Toronto starts playing, when the Defiant starts playing in the city, that it'll build like a kind of a curiosity to be like, just what is it, especially if, say, things aren't too expensive and if it's in a transit-oriented location and not out in the middle of, like, Brampton or Bowmanville?
I think the curiosity will be there, mm-hmm. particularly because, like, if it, I would hope it's relatively affordable, right? And so if you're, like, a parent and you're looking for some, like, Friday night entertainment with your family, and you know that your kids are into the esports thing, you may not be into it. Like, how many parents like just decide to go to stuff because their kids are into it, right? Like, I can see that happening for sure, but, like, whether or not it's sustainable, that's another question altogether. That, like, I have no idea. Like, I was just blown away that 500 people decided to click reserve on a free ticket online to walk into Real Sports on a Friday night.
Yeah.
So that was free. So whether or not that many people are going to do that when it's, like, you know, like $20 plus, I don't know.
Well, I mean, it is cheaper than going to a Leafs game, or, you know, even going to, I went to a Marlies game the other day, and they were very cheap, and it was lots of kids, lots of people. It became like a little family-friendly event. Do you think that, especially with things like Overwatch, it does have a lightheartedness to it, as, say, other esports things don't have? Do you think that could be a good gateway into becoming this, be a family event?
If it can get past, if I guess, like, parents can get past the fact that, like, yeah, it looks lighthearted and there is no blood or anything like that, there's still guns and you're still shooting people in the head.
Mm-hmm.
You just kind of like going eh, right? And I feel the same way, but like that's because like we're wired differently. We know the difference. But there, like I said, there are people who literally haven't played a video game since the sixth, seventh grade. Their parents now, and they see the violence, they see guns, you know, like, I can see how that would be a barrier.
Yeah, fair enough. So we're running out of time. I was just curious, so overall, after their, you know, big first win, do you see, what's the longevity, in your opinion, of the Toronto Defiant?
I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah.
The Toronto Defiant and the ownership group is very, very ambitious. They have big plans. I think they'll definitely live through this season and next, with the momentum of the arena being constructed and whatnot. Beyond that though, just quite frankly, because like I said, like Overwatch as a game, it's declining, like the amount of players playing is dropping. If there isn't really like an interest in the game from like a player's perspective, how will that affect like this league that's built around it? So what will Overwatch look like in 2021 is one of my biggest questions, because it feels like Blizzard has to do something to make the game, I guess, more appealing, more fun. That might mean going free to play, because it is still not a free to play game. They have an entire league now, like into this entire ecosystem to support. How are you going to do it?
Well, that is an excellent question, and maybe we'll pose that to our listeners as well. How do you think they should do it? Also, we have some actual fun swag merch to give away from the Toronto Defiant. If you would like to your chance to win it, check out our Twitter, Gaming in the Six, and we'll be tweeting out what we have, how you can win it, and shortly after the show has been posted. You can find our podcast sporadically at SoundCloud, on iTunes, and Google Play. For Steve Leung, I am Christine Chubb. Have a wonderful day. You'll hear from us again sometime.